Folks, hi there. This is Elvin Shamroth here again with our Example of Teleseminar. I want to welcome you all. And even though we, many of you have been here time after time, we always get new people joining us. So how this works is we get volunteers to submit cases of interest, typically problem cases, complicated cases, not sure how to defend them. They submit them to me, and we have a conversation revolving them. 99 times out of 100, while the case might be a specific issue, invariably there are a multitude of issues that are relevant to everyone from a case construction point of view. And so it's actually a beautiful way of bringing up these issues. And in fact, today we've got exactly that kind of situation. So it's increasingly more common, but still unusual case on a case list. But it's got some tremendous relevance to exactly what we want to accomplish today on our teleseminars, which is sharing with you the basic principles of how to construct a good case list. So we've got one person who has volunteered to be on the hot seat. And let me just see if she's with us. Ariana, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Ariana, can you hear me?
I think. Yes, I can. Thank you so much. And welcome. And I appreciate very much you volunteering, because you may or may not be aware that last time I was actually a little grumpy. Some of you might have thought, well, he's a little grumpy, because for two or three sessions in a row, no one was volunteering. And it loses so much of the impact if we don't have a case to discuss. So, Ariana, I really appreciate you submitting a case. And it's actually a very interesting case. Not from, Ariana, what you think is the interesting point, but there are a lot of other issues, as I mentioned, that I can't wait to dissect out with you so that we can all learn from this. So, Ariana, I received your email, and I've got your case in front of me. But for the sake of everyone listening in, I want you to just briefly, succinctly present your case to us, and then we'll talk.
Great. So I had a 21-year-old G0 transgender male come to my office requesting a hysterectomy consult. Patient had a past medical history of type 1 diabetes, Graves' disease, suffered from multiple mental health disorders, and had daily tobacco use. So I did a history and physical, did some counseling. The counseling included cervical cancer screening prevention and my personal pre-op requirements, which were that patient would need an updated pap smear, an A1C less than 7, and a tobacco cessation. Currently for his type 1 diabetes, he was on an insulin pump and reported his A1C was uncontrolled, but I didn't have any lab values or a current A1C on him. For his Graves' disease, he was on methimazole, and for his mental health disorders, he had multiple, so I didn't list them in my case, but medical management was being provided by a psychiatrist, and he had regular follow-up with a counselor. And then for the tobacco use, we discussed tobacco cessation, Wow, this is hard to do.
I'm so pleased you said that, because this is one point that I want to emphasize to everyone listening in. Until you actually literally speak it out as you present a case, and I mean that literally, you've got to literally mouth the words, you've got to hear yourself say it. When you think out the presentation, it's one thing. It's a completely different thing when you actually speak it out. So what you just said now, Ariana, absolutely correct. And this is another reason why it's so important for each and every one of you to practice as much as you can presenting cases, having as much oral exam exposure as you can. And I'm plugging myself here and volunteering for to be on the hot seat on these teleseminars. Folks, it's free. Get the best you can out of it. So volunteer. So I interrupted you there, Arianna, but carry on.
Sorry, no.
Carry on.
At the end of the visit, basically, if we ended up, he declined a pap smear at that visit. The plan was for him to continue his testosterone therapy, which he had already been on for 3 years and being provided by an outside provider. He was to follow up with his endocrinologist for the type 1 diabetes and the Graves' disease and continue his management with psychiatry and his counselor. And he declined nicotine replacement at that time, and he did not follow up with me.
Okay. Let me just confirm with you. This is an office patient, correct? Or a surgery
correct.
Patient?
And so it was to be an office patient in the LGBTQIA section
category.
Of the office visit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I seem to remember when I read through your email, you mentioned that you did have other cases in the GYN section of your case list.
Yes, I will have another. I'll have another transgender male patient who has a hysterectomy scheduled for a surgery actually scheduled with me in the next month or so.
Okay. This is just a curiosity. Are you involved in a transgender clinic? And the reason I say that, just for FYI, all of you should know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, it was unheard of to have a case like this on a case list. Today, 6, 7 years later, I'm not going to say it's common, but it's not that infrequent. So that's just point number one. What I'm a little surprised with you, Arianna, is that you seem to have a few cases, or at least potentially a few cases on your list in this category. Are you working in the San Francisco area, Bay Area, perhaps? And
no,
I'm being a little
not
judgmental
actually.
When I say that.
No,
where are you
no. I'm actually in San Antonio, so a larger metro area. But I don't advertise myself as a transgender provider necessarily.
Okay.
I don't actually treat or initiate therapy. Just happen to get them in my clinic.
Okay. So look, the first thing I have to emphasize very, very strongly to you as well as everyone listening in, the politics of transgenderism remain outside the exam room. And the politics of transgenderism, likewise, will remain completely out of our conversation because I wanted to mimic the examination. So I don't want you to feel, any of you to feel worried. What happens if my examiner doesn't agree with this kind of stuff from a political point of socio-political point of view? You know, what am I going to do? Both you and the examiner should, and to all intents and purposes, will leave the politics of the situation outside the exam room. Perhaps where this is even more of an issue is not so much in transgenderism, but in those of you who are doing terminations of pregnancy. The same point. Don't feel anxious and worried. They're going to ding me because I'm doing so many abortions. Again, the politics of the situation stays outside the exam room, okay? Now, that being said, I've got to ask you a couple of things, Arianna. There's a lot going on in this case. And folks, what I'm going to do with Arianna right now, you need to do pretty much on every single case that you've got. Some, it's a little more, some it's a little less, but you've got to go through this process very quickly in your head. I'll drag it out a little bit with this call, but you need to go through this process. I'm just going to mention in a bullet list fashion the issues on which you can have a conversation in the exam, okay? Mm-hmm. So the obvious one is transgenderism. The second one is hysterectomy in a 21-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
The third one is thyroid disease, diabetes, smoking and smoking cessation, pap smear screening. I'm just going looking down your list here. Mental illness. What else do we have here? And I think that's it. That's about 6 or 7 diagnoses that I mentioned. So I'm going to put the question to you, Arianna, which all of you listening should do for yourselves. Number one, which do you think is the most important of all those issues that I mentioned? And number two, which of those issues that I mentioned, which would you really like to have a conversation on? Because you know you'll be able to handle that conversation fairly comfortably. So what's your answer to that question, Arianna?
So the one I think that would probably be most relevant for this one that I would get questions on would probably be transgenderism. The one I'd be most comfortable talking about would probably be back smear screening at this point.
Okay. So that's actually, I love that combination. I don't think you could get away with not having a conversation on transgenderism. And if any of you have a case of transgender on your cases, having managed the patient, you're going to be more than able to handle the kind of questions they're going to ask you. There have been some ACOG publications on this matter, but the truth is, as best as I can assess, the bar is very low in this area of transgenderism. They don't expect you to know, you know, all the nitty-gritty and the fine details. They do want you, however, to have an overall approach. And that's reasonable, because at the end of the day, and I don't know what your situation is, Arianna, but at the end of the day, you might do the hysterectomy, but you're not going to be the one who takes the patient through all the different phases of transgendering, of which hysterectomy is just perhaps the penultimate one.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you need to know transgenderism, but only at a relatively superficial level. And so, yeah,
okay,
you got to learn it, and you probably know more than enough already because you're practicing it in your clinical practice. So that's issue number one. The other issue you said was cervical cancer screening. I'm gonna come back to that in a moment. You've got a whole lot of medical disorders. Now, it sounds to me that you really don't want to get involved in that. If for those of you listening in, if Arianna did want to get involved in that, I would say Graves' disease or well-controlled Graves' disease, brittle, uncontrolled diabetes. I would even leave out the Graves' disease. I would just say multiple medical complications, including uncontrolled diabetes. Because when you phrase it that way, the examiner will say, Okay, well, what was it that was so difficult about the diabetes? You see, you're highlighting that area that you might want to talk about. And that's the point I want to get across here.
You need,
at the time of writing your case list, you need to highlight those issues that you do want to talk about and minimize or, if reasonable, remove entirely from your case list issues you don't want to talk about. So, yeah, smoking is another question that you could, subject that you might want to be asked. But I'm sure you've got smoking on other cases that you can generate that conversation. I mean, this would not be a good case to try and get a smoking conversation going, okay? And just by the way, for those of you who are listening in, and Arianna wrote to, in the treatment column, tobacco use, and you put down the number 1-800-QUIT-NOW. I just want to encourage you folks, and I'm talking in general terms, not to do this, because you're moving across into the commercial realm. This might be a commercial entity, 1-800-QUIT-NOW, and you don't want to be involved in it. You want to say stay totally medical, and you better to say referred for tobacco cessation therapy. But you don't have to say 1-800-QUIT-NOW. That's my objection. So you follow that one point. But Arianna, I'm going to suggest you take that off completely. You don't have to mention that here. It's up to you. But I'll say take it off completely. Just say multiple medical complications, including, if you want to talk about diabetes. Otherwise, just say multiple medical issues as you want. And if they ask you what were they, then you can verbally mention the ones that you want to talk about, okay? But you said you wanted to talk about transgenderism, which we've discussed. That's actually very simple. And you want to talk about cervical cancer screening. So, I'm going to divide this into two sections. And again, folks, the way I'm dissecting this out with Arianna, I want you to do it the same principle in every decision point that you make. In the realm, Arianna, of cervical cancer screening, what can you be a little specific as to what kind of questions do you want? What kind of conversations do you want to get?
Well, it's not only that, but for this case, I was trying to highlight that I have like certain requirements for a patient to take a patient to surgery, that I'm not just taking everybody, I guess. That was more so what I was like my goal of that case trying to get at. But for
are you saying, and don't get my tone of voice wrong here, it's a genuine open question, are you saying that you need to have a pap smear on every hysterectomy that you perform? Is that the issue that you want to address?
No, this patient had never had a pap smear.
Had she have had, so you want to do a pap smear because she's never had one?
Yes.
Is it, if she was not going for it, so there are two questions. And this is where the conversation will go.
Okay.
Number one, if she was not having a hysterectomy, would you do a pap smear?
Yes.
On what basis?
The patient's never had a pap smear and is 21. So
okay.
Whether
and what's
whether
the,
penetrative
what's
intercourse.
The, What's the age where we start doing pap smears?
21.
Fine, perfect. If she had had a pap smear before, which was normal, let's say at age 15, would you do another pap smear?
Yes, I would.
On what basis? Because she's having a hysterectomy or just because she's due for one?
No, because the patient would be due for one.
Are you saying that on the basis that you're assuming she's high risk, given the fact that she had a pap smear at age 15, or may have erroneously, needlessly had a pap smear at age 15?
No, if a pap smear was done at 15, depending on the results, patient would need a repeat pap smear either at 3 years or 5 years.
Okay.
It's
dependent. It's not an absolute answer. That's what I wanted to get at. Okay.
Okay.
So, and there's one other point where you can go with this. What is the potential risk, theoretically, to a patient who undergoes a hysterectomy, even as young as age 21, who's never had a pap smear?
Sorry, can you repeat the question? I don't think I understood the question.
Young as age 21, is there a risk to her, and we're talking theoretical now, okay, is there a risk to her of having a hysterectomy without first having a pap smear?
No, I would say the risk is low.
There's no question it's very low. What theoretically, and I'm having this conversation with you just as an excuse, and the examiners can do this, just as an excuse to get out, to pass out your understanding of pap smear screening. If she would have had it, let's assume she didn't have a pap smear. If she would have had a pap smear and it was CIN3, and you landed up doing a hysterectomy, I misspoke. If she had a pap smear which showed high-grade SIL, and then you did a leap and a cone and a leap and it showed CIN3, let's even say clear margins, and then you did the hysterectomy, would that be okay, no problem?
Yes.
Would that be okay? If you had positive margins on the cone, would that be okay?
Yes, you can still perform a hysterectomy.
Well, if there's positive margins, ideally you should re-cone, okay? But there's a risk. Okay?
Right.
What I'm going to develop my theme in a moment. If it didn't, if the histology came back on your final hysterectomy specimen, CIN3, is that a problem?
Yes.
No, it's not. As long as you got it all out, which with a hysterectomy, you would assume so. Okay? If you got on a hysterectomy specimen, CIN3...
Got it all out, clear margins.
Yeah. You've treated her. She's good.
Yes.
If it was stage 1A1, and you did a hysterectomy, is she okay?
I would have to review cervical cancer stages.
Aha, and this is the point. Because if you want to have a conversation of the importance of doing a pap smear on this patient, the question will become, well, what might the risk have been if you didn't? And the truth is, even if it was a CA cervix stage 1A1, the treatment is still simple hysterectomy. So she's still okay. It would have to be, and I'm a generalist, not a gen oncologist, but my understanding is it would have to be a stage 1A2 before you might want to start talking about lymph node dissection and radical hysterectomy, which then, in retrospect, you might have done the wrong surgery. So the chances of this being a problem retrospectively is exceedingly small, okay? She would have to have had a mildly advanced cancer in order for this to be a problem. But from an academic point of view, dissecting out this point is a reasonable conversation to have, and therefore you've got to be prepared for it. That's all. And that's the crux of what I want to suggest. And if you're comfortable to have this kind of conversation, which I would encourage you to be comfortable, because it's a pretty neat conversation to have, then I would put it down on paper, and I might write it down as follows: declined pap smear despite extensive counseling. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because then the examiner reads it and they say, well, why did she decline? First of all, how did you counsel her? Why did she decline it? And why did you feel it was so important to counsel her extensively in a 21-year-old? And then you say, look, there's an advantage and a disadvantage. One doesn't want to overdo it. But at the same time, if I do the hysterectomy and it comes back, heaven forbid, at stage 1A2, I theoretically could have done the wrong surgery. It's exceedingly unlikely. But that was why I felt it was important to try and get her to have a pap smear. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a little controversial what I'm saying, but I just want you folks to be ready to have the conversation in case the examiner chooses to bring it up. So does that make sense to you, or does it really sound too crazy for you? Be comfortable to be honest and disagree with me.
No, I think it makes perfect sense.
Okay. And the truth is, that's all that this case holds. I actually agree with you. It's a discussion on transgenderism and cervical cancer screening. Obviously, you've got to know the protocol reasonably well. It's so complicated these days. You don't have to know the whole thing, but you've got to know the basic principles involved. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would add. There's one last thing that I want to mention. And in your email, you questioned, let me find it, because this is so important. One second here. I'm just trying to find in your email. We can talk about that, and you can put that in if you want. And that's part of the typical transgender discussion. That's why I didn't mention it specifically. But what you mm-hmm. did write is, and I want everyone to listen in on this specifically, you wrote, I'm trying to decide if I want to include this patient, and folks, she writes that because we're talking about an office patient here for which she has the choice. Okay, so I'm trying to decide if I want to include this patient on my office list. I want to fulfill the category to show a well-rounded practice and have another transgender case on my GYN list. So when I read this, I realized I had to comment on this because this way of thinking is wrong, and it's wrong for a couple of reasons. Number one, folks, it is important to have a well-rounded case list. But in the office section, you've got about 45 or so categories. And let me take the example of preventative care. You might have an 18-year-old and a 62-year-old in that category. And they, given the fact that the one's a teenager and the other's a postmenopausal woman, the conversations are completely different. And that is a very appropriate distribution. So what I'm saying is there may well be some categories that have two, legitimately and appropriately, two cases in them. There'll be several that will have one case in them, and there'll be several that will have zero cases in them. So the fact that without this case you would have had zero, that doesn't bother me. It's more important that you're comfortable to have a conversation on transgenderism than it is to have a case in this category. And let me drive my point home there. And you, by the way, it sounds like you're comfortable to have this conversation, transgenderism. So by all means, put it in. I'm always advocating having a well-rounded case. But in this situation, I wouldn't put this in just for the simple reason of having a well-rounded case. It's got to be for the sake of being comfortable to have this conversation, and secondarily having a well-rounded case list. And to drive the point home, I would ask you the following question. Would you like to have a conversation in the exam based off a patient who has primary amenorrhea? How would you feel about that case and the conversation that might ensue?
If I studied, I mean, I haven't started studying, but I think that that's a good topic or an easy conversation that could be had.
Okay. So let me ask you, are you an REI?
No. I'm a general.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you two questions, okay?
Okay.
Tell me about the pathophysiology and the development of puberty that goes for precocious puberty and delayed puberty. And tell me about the differential diagnosis of a blind-ending vaginal pouch. Now, do you still feel you would like to have that conversation?
Not at the moment.
I don't think ever. I don't think, any of us listening in. Look, I'll be honest. I think those are the worst questions that a person can be asked. Even REIs don't exactly groove on this material. But getting back to your situation, Ariana, and everyone listening in, this is a classical example. I've had a handful of candidates who said to themselves, until I caught them, fortunately before they submitted, they said, wow, I've got a case of primary amenorrhea. That's wonderful. I'm going to broaden the spectrum of pathology on my case list. But look where you're going to broaden it to. You're going to invite questions of the most horrific kind. You don't want to do that. So while, yes, I do encourage candidates to have a broad spectrum of pathology on the case list, I don't want that to be at the expense of putting cases on your case list that are really problematic. And I think, Ariana, you would agree with me, primary amenorrhea would not be a fun conversation to have in the exam, correct?
No, I don't think so.
So can you see the analogy to what you were saying on with respect
that
to
definitely
to have
tweak your list. Tweak your list to topics you are comfortable discussing.
Correct. So I've even got I've got a slide in my cases construction course, which says choose your cases for office, because office is where you got the choice. G1 and OB, you pretty much don't have a choice. But choose your cases with the following three things in mind. Number one, it should involve a subject on which you're comfortable to have a conversation, and where if you engage in that conversation, you'll be able to impress the examiner. Number two, it should be something that would be of interest to the examiner, not boring yeast infections, unless it's perhaps resistant yeast infection, recurrent yeast, maybe that's a little different. But it should be of something that you can comfortably talk about. Number two, something that will be of reasonable interest to the examiner. And number three, and I mention it in order, number three, it should be such that when you look at your case list in its entirety, the office section, it gives a broad spectrum of pathology. Now, you can get a broad spectrum of pathology without including cases that are going to generate the kind of questions that I suggested with primary amenorrhea. So I hope you understand that point. All right, I've raised all the issues that I want to mention on this case. Ariana, I throw it back to you. Any questions that you may have on this case?
Well, because I was hoping for it to be more of like a pre-op counseling case, What could I potentially
start that conversation
if it doesn't come up?
Okay. I would say treatment, repetitive, and extensive or counseling, and that invites what? Why would it have? Why did it have to be repetitive? And that's how you get the conversation going. The other way, which would be even more likely to generate the conversation, you can write concern over counseling adequacy with an exclamation mark. And then the examiner might say, well, why were you concerned? And you can say, look, this is a major decision. I mean, I'm just giving you the superficial answer. This is a major irreversible decision for a patient. This particular patient had multiple medical problems, which included mental health. I felt it was really important to give as much counseling as was feasible to this patient before she made a decision of this magnitude. And that's how you get the conversation going. So you need to word it in a way that's going to pique the examiner's curiosity. And I, look, some of you listening in are going to say, that's too bold. That's too out there. I'm not comfortable to do that. I can just tell you, if I were writing my case list up now, I would not hesitate to put down concern regarding counseling adequacy, because it implies a negative, and that's what the examiner will pick up, that it might have been inadequate. And when they ask you, then you say, no, on the contrary, I was concerned too. And so I gave extensive, over multiple visits, over an extended period of time. I counseled, I discussed every conceivable risk that needed to be addressed. So it was very extensive, and I was concerned in the beginning that it wasn't sufficient, but at the end, I was that much more comfortable that it was okay and adequate. So be comfortable, folks, to be a little bold in addressing this issue. So are you comfortable with that, Ariana?
Yep, I am.
Okay. Any other questions on this case, Ariana?
No, I don't think I have any.
Okay, very good. Let me ask you, I'll do this with everyone. Do you feel this conversation? And be honest, I've got broad shoulders and I can take bad news. Do you think this conversation was helpful to you in terms of how to handle and present the case? Hello, are you there? Hello?
Can you hear me?
I lost you there for a second. Yeah.
Do you think
this conversation was helpful to you?
It was very helpful, and it gave me a very different perspective on how I need to write it up.
Yeah, and I'm very pleased you said that, because as I was reading your email, I suspected you had a sentiment that was really 180 degrees out of phase to what I was going to share with you. So I'm pleased you saw that. Folks, I raise this issue because I want all of you to appreciate. You notice, I never mentioned Ariana's last name once. I don't even have it. I don't even know her name. And I don't need to for the purposes of this session. And the reason I make a big deal out of this, Ariana could have said something, might have said something that could have been embarrassingly wrong. And she didn't, but it can happen. And I never use the patient, the candidate's last name. So you remain anonymous. And I emphasize this because I want you all to volunteer and be comfortable. I turned around to my secretary earlier today. I said, if we do not get any people to volunteer, I'm going to cancel the next thing completely, the next teleseminar, because it makes a huge difference. And we can get so much more out of it when someone does present. So I'm saying all of this because I want you to volunteer. We're going to do our next teleseminar in 2 weeks' time. It'll be on the 11th of May. And folks, please, I'd like to have two people that we can go through. So please don't be shy. Submit cases, and I'll be happy to discuss them with you. It really is worthwhile. So with that being said, I will tell you on Sunday, where I'm going to be doing a cases construction course in Baltimore. I'm guessing I will see a number of you there, and I'm just going to tell you, you'll be very happy that you came. It's really, I'm not just tooting my own horn. It's really a good course, and it gives you tremendous insight into how to construct your cases. If you're thinking about it and you haven't registered yet, be it for Baltimore or online, do so as soon as possible, because the sooner you hear what is the contents of this course, the sooner it'll affect the way you collect cases, the way you input your cases, and it'll make for a much, much stronger case list for you in the exam. So if I see you on Sunday, great. If you haven't signed up and you're thinking about it, do it as soon as possible. All right, folks, that being said, Ariana, thank you so much for volunteering once again. And to the rest of you, we'll do this all again in 2 weeks' time. Thank you so much, folks. This concludes the teleseminar. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.